Good morning, lovely people out there in the world of. I'm Richard Bobes, and this is The Naked Englishman on the 27th today. Blimey, March has just vanished. This year is going rapid. 27th of March, 2020, whatever it is, coming up to 7 o'clock, I think, thereabouts. I've got a busy morning this morning. It's good to take Julia's car in to be assessed. And then we've got to go to the farm shop. And, of course, I've got to record a video. I've got to release a video. And I've got an interview at 5. So, another busy day. Yesterday, we had a bit more of a relaxing day. Well, in the morning. Took a stroll down to the park. The sun was shining. It was very lovely. Took our pipe, sat on a park bench. And it was very lovely. And then we went round and had a look at our favourite clothing shop, Jules's. I forget what she calls it now. Jules's little shop,
Little Shop of Jules.
And I bought. I didn't mean to buy anything, but I bought another waistcoat and a cravat, which is in this bag. And I'm going to just. I haven't hung them up yet. They're just sitting down here, so I'm going to go and hang them up. Julia bought some jewellery and bits. I remember rightly.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go and hang these up on the thing rather than let them get buried under books and all the other nonsense that one has. So that was, didn't expect to buy anything, didn't. But the trouble is, we haven't been in there for a long time and the stock changes, you know. And so there was some lovely stuff. But one has to be a bit, careful with your purchases. But anyway, this will be a nice new waistcoat, mainly for performing in, really. It's quite loud. It's a beautiful yellow thing with green and brown check, like graph paper. Very country, but slightly upper country, sporty, I suppose. You know, all you needed was a vintage car, pipe, hat, and various things, and it would look the part. And she sells a lot at the there's the Great Speed thing at Goodwood and the Vintage Revival jobby that they do at Goodwood, whatever it is, anyway. She does that. And also, I have ordered a book. And it came, I think yesterday or the day before. I can't really remember when it came, actually. Do you want another drink or anything?
Yes, actually, that would be lovely.
Marvellous. Same again?
No, I'd have fruit tea, please.
Fruit tea. This is the pipe book I bought from Alfred Dunhill, written originally in 1924, and then it was updated by his son, Alfred Dunhill, Alfred H. Dunhill, and then published in 1969. So it had been going for about 40-odd years. And it's a book of pipes, it's true. It wasn't quite what I was expecting. I thought it was going to talk about all sorts of meerschaums and briars and tobaccos and that sort of thing. But it's very much a historical book. Let's fill this up. It's very much a history book, really, of the origins of pipes, the different tribes that smoked it. And there's some beautiful illustrations in here, and it kind of, well, all sorts of wonderful pipes. It doesn't really, I'm just looking to see if there's much on the, lots about clay pipes and various things, a myriad of pipes of Africa. There's pages and pages of that. Water pipes. Talks about water pipes. I'm just some Far Eastern pipes. Pipes of the North. So yes, not much at all on briars and Western pipes. I suppose they didn't think back then you needed to say much, because you could just go into the shop and buy all this stuff, and I suppose from a historic point of view. Anyway, I bought it thinking it was going to be a bit more encyclopedic on styles of pipes, you know, the classic styles of pipes and the classic tobaccos, just to give me a bit of a grounding. So it wasn't quite that. Glad I didn't pay too much for the book. But yeah, so not quite what I was expecting, but interesting all the same. I suppose what it does say is that people have been smoking pipes for ever, really, in one form of, you know, one form or another, but not necessarily tobacco. They're smoking all sorts of other strange derivatives. And off the top of my head, I can't think, all sorts of herbs and things. And he does talk about a few of the things that they smoked. Different people smoke for different reasons. But tobacco, of course, is the main thing. Just making the cup of tea. I've had a fruit tea this morning. So I quite fancy a coffee. Which is what I'm having. So anyway, yeah, it's very interesting. But I do now want to try and get a book on the subject that I wanted to get originally, if you see what I mean. Let me just pour out this tea. The coffee even. Marvellous, there we go. We're all there. We're all there. So we're going to the farm shop. Hopefully this time in the farm shop they will have some raw milk, because they were having an inspection last week, which was a bit of a nuisance. And because of that, they could not sell any. So we didn't get any last week. Luckily I had a couple of frozen ones. Milks in the freezer, obviously, and I've been eking it out, but that just means I haven't had a lot of raw milk this week, and I do enjoy a glass of raw milk almost every day. So if they've got some, I should be getting the supplies up today. Supplies, as Cilla Black once said in a sort of bastardized English. Right, madam, here is your tea.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to have to get myself a new carpet in here. When I say carpet, I mean rug. This one is so filthy now. Every time I look at it, I think, oh, it needs a hoover. But you hoovered it yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah, stick that on. This is a harsh light. That makes you feel cold. It does look like it's going to be sunny today, which is nice, although there is a bit of cloud mounting on the east. We watched a film yesterday, didn't we, when we were having our dinner? Oh, Stir Crazy, with Richard Pryor and the guy from... What's that film? Chocolate Factory.
Gene Hackman.
Not Gene Hackman.
Gene Wilder, I mean.
Gene Wilder.
Who the heck is Gene Hackman? Why did that name fall out of my mouth?
Gene Hackman died recently, didn't he? And,
did he?
Yeah, he was about to spill the beans on the... he's got hidden files and hidden recordings of Hollywood and the double dealings.
What was he famous for?
The French Connection.
Was, I don't think I ever saw that.
He's in Connection. Tons of films.
French Connection. No.
Yeah, 70s.
I'll probably kick myself.
Yes, yeah,
I will kick myself because I know the name.
Yeah, Gene Hackman, very famous. Like he.
But he's not Gene Wilder, though, is he?
No.
Definitely not.
That is true. And I don't know if Gene Wilder's still alive. I imagine.
I don't think he is.
They were all snuffing, you know, they're all snuffing it. Anyway, we watched that just for a bit of a laugh. Because I made a chili con carne. It was very nice, and we don't watch films every night. We don't have a television. We don't, you know. Often we're just sitting here reading, and in the winter and the colder nights, we've just got the fire on, puffing our pipes and having a chat, and you know, doing good things like that.
Oh yeah.
You know,
died suspiciously recently. I didn't know that.
Yes, I didn't delve deeply into it, but there's tons of videos now revealing about Gene Hackman, how he had a secret... he had Hollywood in the palm of his hands because he had all these secret files.
Banged to rights, except he's now been banged
and
off.
He's being killed, and he was 90, but the suitcase with all the tapes has disappeared, of course, because the first people into the house was the FBI, or words to that effect.
A weird-looking man.
Who are you talking about now?
Gene Wilder. I must say, when he kissed that girl in the film last night, I cringed. I love him as an actor, but my goodness, he's not... Anyway, yeah, he's dead.
He's dead as well, is he?
Yeah, 29th August 2016. If Wikipedia's to be believed, of course. Anyway, there you go.
There you go. These people come and these people go. We will be one of them at some point.
I was, but now I am not, but I will have been forever.
There you go.
I wrote that for my tombstone when I was a kid. Isn't that weird? It was because we were asked to in class and I never forgot.
What, your teacher asked you to write your own tombstone obituary thing?
Isn't that lovely?
But epitaph, isn't it?
Epitaph, yes, that's right. That's the word I was looking for. We were learning about epitaphs and we were told to write our own one.
Gosh, that's almost a voodoo thing, isn't it? That's almost pins in the doll.
This is what I mean. It was bad enough when I was at school. Just a few moons ago. Only a few.
Yes. Gosh, I can't think of anything more. And the question is, did they teach you to write in capital letters on the tombstone? Because that's all you get. Because
I can't remember,
it is,
but I think so.
Because the tombstone, for those that don't know, is really not to the person, not to the real man or woman. It's actually, because it's all in capital letters, it's to the dead fiction, dead entity.
And funny enough, though, there was a massive, massive push to getting people to write in cursive. Joined up writing.
Right. Yes, we had to write in cursive.
But there was a massive push towards it. It wasn't like, oh, you can write, there we go. It was just like, you have to write like this.
Oh, yes, all joined up writing. I mean, it's funny, you sort of accept these things, don't you, when they say, oh, this is what you need to do. Oh, OK, that's how you learn to put things on paper. Oh, OK, and other people can read it. Oh, OK, that makes sense. And joined up writing means you don't have to keep taking your pen off the page as you write. And you think, oh, OK.
It never felt intuitive to me.
I mean, it feels intuitive now. I mean, I just do it. Not all letters are joined together, but some of them are. It's so scruffy. But it's interesting that they wanted to teach... I suppose because back when I was at school, they had typewriters, but we never used them.
Well...
Oh, can hear next door's child crying.
Oh, it just occurs to me, I mean, why they called it that, though.
What?
Cursive.
Oh, cursive. Yes, I know. People, you see, every word has been analysed to this nth degree. And I went along with it for a while. And now I just think, well, if you were to build up a library of a dictionary of what you could go through the dictionary and you could just find words that sound as if they are dodgy. Or separate into the syllables, and you go, oh, yes, that means this and that. And then you present it to someone, and people go, oh, yes. Whereas it may not have been the word cursive. You know, if they had just said, well, joined up writing, which is what I always knew it as, then you wouldn't be able to sort of make it into a negative, could you? But so I'm not. I am actually not as convinced as these everybody in the truth movements. You know, they. It seems to me they are very often looking for negatives.
It brings a whole new meaning to the speaking of tongues.
What does?
Well.
How do you mean?
The words thing.
Speaking of tongues.
Yeah, speaking in tongues. It's something that's been, well, it's a Shakespearean thing, isn't it?
But yes, but yeah. When people speak in tongues, they're going, because I've seen people who've demonstrated that to me. And they just go, and I go, what
to me is an unexplained, that's like unfulfilled, that's not completely the truth. Because speaking tongues is just when someone sounds like they're speaking gibberish, necessarily, but it's the devil's tongue. That's the insinuation. But when you when you look at it legally wise, in a court of law, if you're speaking tongues, well, it's an accusation, isn't it? I can't explain myself properly, but quite frankly, the law courts, they speak in tongues because they're not speaking in simple English. They're speaking in legalese,
yes,
which is misleading and has double meanings.
Yes.
We think it means one thing. They know it means that something else under the law.
Yes.
That's speaking tongues.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I just think of it as talking a different language.
Well, gibberish is how you just explained it, but...
Well, no, I meant what they speak in court is a different language.
Oh, yeah, legalese.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. No.
But when they get you caught up in it, that is speaking tongues. They trap you with the legalese.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my take on that.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a very valid take, and I'm not arguing with you. Just
not agreeing either.
Well, I don't know. No, it's only I've heard people say, you know, not all, I don't know how authoritative.
You listen to too many other people other than me.
Yes, that's probably true. how did we get into speaking tongue? Oh, cursive script and copperplate and gravestones.
And by the way, my granddad, the train driver, he used to write in capitals.
I get people, it's very irritating, but I do get a couple of people who email me and it's all in capitals. And I can tell you, it's very hard to read.
Mm.
It's very hard to read. And
my brain automatically has them shouting in my head. And I'm like, will you just quiet them down?
Well, that's it. I mean, we're told that's shouting in text speak, isn't it?
Mm.
But if you've got a page of capitals letters, you've got to argue, is that English? Because English is in lowercase. Because it is argued as well in the Chicago Book of Styles, I haven't got a copy, so I can't verify this, that capitals effectively are hieroglyphs. They're not real letters. So, you know, and the Chicago Book of Styles is, it's like anything, isn't it? It's like somebody has said, this is what writing should be. And therefore, if it doesn't fit to our, what do you call it, rules, it's not writing. And in the legal world, that's what they are supposed to adhere to make a document legal. If it falls short of the Chicago, whatever I just called it, Chicago thing of styles, Book of Styles. And I did think of buying it, but, you know, what a copy of that is about 80 quid or something. I may have a PDF of it, actually. And so it tells you all the sort of the font you should use and all sorts of things, you know. I come to the conclusion that do what you damn well like, you know. If you want to be in the jurisdiction world, perhaps you've got to do that, but I don't want to be in their world. And also, who's to say that anything is correct other than yourself? People are telling us all the time, this is this, and this is this, and that's the other. But ultimately, it comes to me, it all comes back to this business of consciousness, where, or what's man-made, you know, this. I get really annoyed with these people who talk about the Anunnaki and how we've been
genetically modified,
our DNA of this and all this, and by people of different things. And I just think to myself, you know, and they say, well, they came down in a spaceship and they did this and do that. And I think to myself, these are such human concepts that if an alien really turned up, I think an alien would be beyond our normal understanding and beyond our physical whatever, probably in a different dimension, and we wouldn't have these very human Western concepts that we see, because I think it just, we couldn't imagine what another thing, and it's all, oh no, they're all very similar and this, and I just think it's very neat, isn't it? That's very neat that they all have the same sort of philosophy and this, that and the other, if they really are on the other side of the universe and they've come here. I just think it's, I find it hard to think that that can be true, because I think one would have to really use your imagination to get out of a human world to know what an alien world, you know, would be like. I mean, you're better off looking at a piece of lichen and thinking, you know, that's alien to human, because that's so different. I'm not saying that they would be giant lumps of lichen coming down on us, but all I'm saying is, if you had a different, you know, why would they have two arms and two legs and big heads and almond-shaped eyes? You just think, oh, that's so human thinking, isn't it? Oh, what does an alien look like? Well, they've got to have a bigger brain, so we'll give them a big head. Why would they need a bigger brain? Maybe they have pinheads, because maybe they don't carry, you know, if I was thinking about an alien or was a designer of an alien, why would you want to have a big cumbersome head like they draw all the time? Why not have the ability to just, like with the internet now, you could save your documents to the cloud. Why not have the brain, or rather the mind and the knowledge and everything else, in the ether and only need a tiny little receiver? We carry mobile phones that are much, much more advanced than apparently when we went to the moon, and computers and all of those days. Well, why wouldn't you have a tiny little head with an antenna that, you know, like a pineal gland antenna, not a physical antenna, because I think that's what we have anyway, to a certain degree. I don't think the brain is as clever as we think. I just think it's a tuning fork. It's like a wireless. It's like a radio. And we tune in to our higher self, our inspiration, and our mind. I don't think a mind is in our heads. I think that's complete bollocks. I think the brain just has a function whilst we're alive. And beyond that is our subconscious and our mind and our, you know, our soul and various things. So if I was designing an alien, I wouldn't have them with big heads, because you wouldn't need that big head. It's not processing anything. Especially when you see their bodies. You know, they have these aliens with these big heads that's supposed to be processing. And you think, you've got these weak little bodies that you stick under that, you know, with these awfully stupid looking hands and fingers, and you think, well, come on, if you're that intelligent and what have you, and you've come across the world, I mean, our bodies on this world are so brilliant with our disposable thumb and our various and our fingers and our legs, and the way we can gracefully do a number of different things, all sorts of, I mean, the body has been so exquisitely designed, and to a degree we're relatively intelligent and we can think and, you know, survive and climb trees, build houses, create works of art and all of this, all with our body. And you look at what people can do when they engrave on the top of a pinhead, you know, in such miniature things or massive things. And if they're very clever, they can actually communicate with one another and create group things. an alien coming to the hit who has greater intelligence and knows more about the universe and can travel faster than the speed of light in these amazing spaceships, so-called. Anybody like that is not going to come with a weak, feeble little body that cannot do anything. It's beyond. And why would you draw them that way? All brain. Oh, yeah. And these big brains have gone through the whole sort of understanding of evolution, have they? Not evolution from monkeys, but I mean evolution from the plough to combine harvesters, whatever, and have built things and can do the same as us, only better, and then build spaceships and fly across to the us, can they? Seems very doubtful, really.
The appearances can be deceiving, though. I mean, you look at a giraffe, the legs, they look so long and spindly, like they could just break in a second. But then you would not want to be kicked by one of those things. Cause...
Yes, but that's not getting into a spaceship and flying across the universe, is it? And has any greater intelligence than us. That's what I'm saying. I mean, yes.
Beyond our concept of...
Well, a giraffe is a fantastic animal, I absolutely grant you. But it doesn't do a lot other than what it does. Whereas man can do a huge range of things. From living in a Eskimo's hut in ice to living in a desert in blistering heat, surviving all sorts of temperatures, surviving all sorts of hardships. I mean, we're an incredibly clever, resourceful and physical being. And, and we're also narcissistic and mean and loving and all these different emotions. And all I'm saying is that if something, and we can't get off the ground, we supposedly we've gone to the moon and we're encircling the Earth a little bit with our, and we're basically killing one another with radiation and all this sort of technology, because there are, and a lot of us have dumbed ourselves down or don't think. All I'm saying is that if something came from the other, other side of the world, it ain't going to look and be as grim as these things that we've shown, because how would you get, it's not like they've just stumbled across a spaceship and went, "Wee-hee, we're going to go and fly and just drive around and see what's happened." I mean, they've got to get through the radiation belt in the atmosphere here. If they come here, they've got to last a long time. They've got to eat something. They must have understood how to, how, so... and then presumably they've got consciousness as well. And where does that come from? And are they part of God's world? When I say God, I'm not talking man with a beard in a cloud. I'm talking the universal one, the creator of stuff. Are they part of that? Are they outside that? There's just too many. There's too many variables. So when I keep going on about these bloody aliens, I just think to myself, this is all very man-made. It's all very suspicious. And we are, the one thing that we humans do have is we're gullible and vulnerable to all sorts of suggestive things. And that's the problem with our mind, is that we can be told things. And of course we have been with the feature films, with the news, with the direction that people have put us. And very few can think outside the box. In fact, very few turn the box off and do something else instead. Anyway, we better get going, hadn't we?
And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
And anyway, it is a wonderful world, but I don't believe it's as physical as everybody talks. It's all a bloody hologram. Kind of. Thank you for listening. Toodle-pip.